Hey, this is Eliza from Eliza and the Delusionals, and you're listening to Verbal Shenanigans.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Oh, hey, everybody. Nice to see you on such short notice. Verlu, this is, well, first off, welcome to Verbal Shenanigans. I'm Scott, that's Mike. I can't remember the last time we, you know, out of just pure boredom, like, hey, Mike, want to cast? I feel like this is like a throwback to like 4 years ago.
4 or 5 years ago, yeah, back in the days where my microphone was hanging out of a rolled toilet paper.
Yep.
Those were the good days, if you consider nowadays.
But, nowadays, that might be good, like, if you had toilet paper. It's a hot commodity.
So we would be, like, bigger than Rogan right now. They'd be like, oh, man, I got to see what happens this week to the rolled toilet paper.
We could, like, auction it off, be like, call in now. We're raffling off some toilet paper. So, Today's cast came out of pure trapped in the house for whatever. I don't even know what day of quarantine this actually is for me. It's like 10, something like that, 11 maybe.
I think I'm on 7 because right. I worked up until mid-Wednesday from my job. So
right.
Yeah, it's about a week now. So
it's probably about 11 for me. So my mind is just slowly deteriorating into nothing. Couldn't really do yard work has been keeping me sane, actually. It's like, okay, I could be outside. I could be doing something that takes up a lot of time. Today, a crappy day in New Jersey. So basically all inside. The walls are kind of, you know, closing in. And I don't know. I felt like calling up my good pal, Mike Berlew, from the South.
Really? Because in the text you said, damn it, I am so bored, I'm reduced to this.
Right.
What are you doing?
Listen, I didn't say that I called every other friend on the list first, and then was like, shit, all right, fine. But, you know.
Cousin I haven't seen in 18 years. Seriously, pick up the phone. I don't want to cast tonight, no.
Do you have any, I have a cousin, when you said that, I have a cousin that is just kind of left the family mysteriously and is like kind of a successful guy. And we always had like a pretty close family, like my cousins, like as far as like holidays and get togethers. I had a cousin that just kind of left the family, barely talks to his mother, doesn't talk to any of us, and him and his brother don't even speak anymore. Do you have any like recluses in the family that just left?
Yeah. In fact, the one of the sons on My uncle's son, he basically...
So your cousin.
Yeah, he right. basically took off, and literally nobody in the family knows where he is. Like, not even my uncle, not his brother, nobody knows what happened to him. He could be king of Saigon, he could have been dead the second he left the driveway.
I like none that was the first idea. Option was the king of Saigon. The second one, maybe dead in the driveway.
Yeah, pretty much that's the Berlew heritage. It's either a hit high or a fall to the bottom. That's all we got, really, right. Scott. Luckily, you got the Berlews on the high, obviously.
So
look what I have.
So looking at your life, you consider yourself more towards the King of Saigon level than the Dead in the Driveway level.
I mean, nobody's been able to convince me otherwise. Lord knows people have tried, but, you know, I mean.
All right, well.
I just go, it's me.
So you would like if, like, I was like, hey, guys, welcome back to Verbal Shenanigans. I'm Scott Brennan from New Jersey. Joining me, as always, is my co-host, the King of Saigon, Mike Berlew.
I mean, that's got a good ring, Scott. I mean, I really hate to take that verbal piece of candy away from our listenership. I feel they're gonna demand it from now on.
Speaking of, I just realized I'm wearing my favorite shirt that came through this podcast. I'll give a little shout out to the guys at Tecmo Madison there. They sent me this awesome Sean Kemp and Gary Payton Seattle Supersonics shirt. My favorite, probably my favorite shirt I have.
Yeah, that was out of a blue kind of gift. And I remember, like, they sent me the same one, and we thanked them. And they're like, oh, Berlew's a Sonics fan? No, no, he's a Sixers fan. And they're like, oh, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Then they sent me a second shirt, which was, I guess, basically, if you knew, like, cheat code or whatever you want to call it.
Wasn't it like Jazzy Jeff?
Yeah, it was Fresh Prince and DJ Jazzy Jeff on the 76ers. So awesome. That was real awesome.
I remember some of the cheat codes. You could get Bill Clinton. You could get Benny, like the Bulls mascot. You can get, I don't know. There were so many of them. You can get all these different cheat codes. That was, to me, did we do Mount Rushmore video games? I don't know if we did.
We did arcade games.
Arcade games, yeah. I think that was my number one. NBA, to me, to this day, NBA Jam stands as the most fun game to play with people. To me, that's what an arcade game is, to where a couple people can pump quarters in and play each other.
Yeah, I mean, those were the lore days of arcade and video games where you didn't just know. Like, it was just so cool. There was always that one kid that, like, had the 411. He's like, listen, you're playing Mortal Kombat tonight? All right, check this out.
Yep.
When you got him in the corner, you go up, down, A, A, B, up, up, and just see me tomorrow and see what happens and all.
Also, arcade games were, like, a little bit more, like, elusive, right? Because you only had, like, the time that you were at the actual physical arcade or where there was the game, and you had to have an amount of cash. Like, you had to have, you know, you had to have some quarters on hand. So your chances to do that move that you said are pretty limited. Whereas, like, now with the gaming systems, you could try it 400 times in a row.
And if it's at the peak of its height, like, they're just, everybody's at that one game. Yeah, so that's not what was cool, though. And you would have the one kid who's like the king of that game. So if you're lucky to get through line and go up against him and he beats you in 5 seconds, it's like, too bad, so sad, get to the back.
Did you guys have anything? Because ours was at, the most games I played was at the bowling alley because I was in a bowling league on Saturday mornings after CCD. A bus would pick us up and take us to the bowling alley. And the bowling alleys naturally had games. And the two games were Mortal Kombat and Street Fighter. And the big thing was, if you were the person on, like, so say, Mike, you were just whooping people, the person coming up next would have to put up quarters for, you know, for you to play and quarters for the winner. So, like, let's say it was 50 cents to play. You would have to come up and you'd have to lay a dollar to pay for both of you to play. And the guy would, you know, the winner would kind of just stay on.
Yeah, we didn't. I'd never been through that. I mean, though I love playing video games, I can't say I was ever the greatest at playing it where I can go up against some
person like that.
So, like, I was the king of the button mashers.
Yep.
And, like, I was.
Is that your second title? The king of Saigon. Yeah. And
king of Saigon / button smashers.
Right.
Yeah, I was the guy that would win games that would infuriate people, where, like, I would be beating people on Double Dragon with just low kick.
Yeah.
Strategy whatsoever. They're like, come on, you gotta stop that. I'm like, no, it's working. Yeah. Man. This is all I got, low kick.
Yeah. Video games these days, I have one video game that I play. My PlayStation is basically my Netflix machine, since I don't really have a smart TV. It's basically my Netflix box, and I play FIFA from time to time, which is like 12-minute long games. And I tried, like, the Red Dead Redemption, like, this game, you know, cowboy game. I can't do anything that involves, like, time and thinking and, like, consistent story. My brain just does not work anymore. So I'll play FIFA. But I got friends who are still into video games so hard. And, like, they'll have a party or something. Well, they'll turn on, like, Mortal Kombat. And I'll play, and I'm just button mashing. And occasionally I'll get around and somehow, like, I don't know, some big boom comes out of my character, and, like, all of a sudden I'm doing something. They're like, how'd you do that? I'm like, I have no idea. But,
well, my hand's skipping, I'm slapping the controller, and then I guess it happened.
Do you still play any video games, or?
No, I mean, I keep seeing the new games and they look awesome and I would love to do it, but yep. Like the last time I played any kind of video games was when we were still in Jersey and Izzy lived in Freehold and we went to Red Bank where they had the barcade.
Okay. So yeah, and, but that was like a one-time trip or a couple-time trip. Like yeah, it wasn't like a yeah, nightly thing.
No. No. And even to that, I'm just playing the old school stuff. I didn't get into the new school yeah, anything.
What was your what would you say is the for you, the golden era of video games? Was it Nintendo? Was it the arcade? Was it 64? What was your wheelhouse?
I would probably say I really got into Sega Genesis. I didn't have a ton of games on that, but I loved the Sega Genesis system. Like I progressed kind of naturally with video games. I had the Atari.
Yep.
I had the little remembered Intellivision.
We had the Sega base system. It was before like Genesis and all that. It was Sega. It was just Sega.
Mm, it was interesting. I had the regular Nintendo, and then I went right to the Genesis. I didn't do the whole Super Nintendo thing, but I think that kind of ended there. I had a former friend who had a van, and in the van, it was like the tripped out vans that they kind of sold for a little bit. Not like, I'm not talking about like windowless vans where you try to get kids into it, but
sure.
Like when there was like a small period of time where like car companies were selling vans that were like tricked out. So he had like a TV in his van and he had an Atari Jaguar.
Yeah, man. God, Jaguar. Yeah, that was like the failed system. Like,
That was, it's not bad to play games, but Lord, when it gets an error, man, you got little hope to get that thing started.
Yeah, I would say my wheelhouse was Super Nintendo, I think. I went from Nintendo to Super Nintendo, you know, the Tecmo Super Bowls, like with my brother. I told this story in the podcast before. I'm a Giants fan, but I grew up always having this little warm spot in my heart for the Steelers because I had to pick a second team, because when you have an older brother and you guys play Tecmo Super Bowl, you're never getting the Giants because he gets the Giants because he's just the older brother. Like, no, you're not getting anything. He's a Giants with Stephen Baker and Phil Sims and Rodney Hampton, I believe. I think. And then I was like, all right, well, I'll take the Steelers and Bubby Brister. So I always had this like little soft spot for the Steelers growing up. In fact, I rooted for the Steelers in that Super Bowl where they played the Cardinals.
Okay.
And I was still kind of like a fan. Like I really loved Hines Ward. And so much so that, you know, this was college and we were drinking. I'm like, oh my God. And if you remember, that game it was a Super Bowl where like nothing happened. And it was like Ben Roethlisberger like drew like 70 yards or something like that. There wasn't much going on. And I was like, oh my God, if Hines Ward wins the MVP, I'm going to streak around the quad. Sure enough, like the ceremony comes on. And all of a sudden you see like Ben Roethlisberger in the background, but then you see like Hines Ward coming to the stage. I'm like, oh no, oh no. You know, and the commissioner presents, oh no, MVP, whatever it was called at the time, goes to Hines Ward, and all the people in the room are like, well, so just ended up with me running around the quad, if you will, with just a Hines Ward jersey on.
Passing
a couple people was pretty interesting, that's for sure. They're like, what the hell? You know, like, woo! And meanwhile, I'm a Giants fan.
Well, when you're doing it, are you just in the moment, say, what happens, happens? Or are you kind of shy where, like, you're taking the jersey and trying to pull it down, yeah, down your private parts?
Oh, yeah. Totally. I never had that confidence to be like, like, let's go. Like, never. But it was pretty bad, man. It was pretty bad.
Did the guy take back the jersey after said streaking?
No, this was my jersey. This was my personal Hines Ward jersey because I really loved Hines Ward.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. So, because that had been awkward and all, bro, I need to borrow your jersey. What are you doing? Don't worry about it. Just give me a jersey for a minute.
It's funny. When you're like growing up, like even like through high schoolish, I feel like you always have like a, you know, another team that you kind of – yeah, well, that's my AFC team or whatever it is, you know, like you always have like someone you As I'm older, I'm like, I don't have anybody. I hate almost every, and I'll pick like a team in the playoff run, like when the Giants and Mets and Devils are out of it, I'll be like, oh, well, I'm rooting for them. But I don't really have a soft spot for any other team. I pretty much can't even stand my personal teams right now.
I mean, looking back, I would say I think a lot of my second teams I just like for either the color or the mascot. Yeah. I think like my second football team, I would say, was the Buccaneers because I just love the creamsicle.
Oh, you front runner. Brady goes to the Buccaneers and Mike Burlow.
Hey, unless he puts on that bright orange, I ain't going to root for him. Don't you worry about that.
Mm.
In baseball, it was the Blue Jays, so it was very disheartening to in 93 when that thing occurred with my Phillies.
Yep.
There was no pleasure in that. I don't think I really have a second in basketball.
Not really hockey.
Maybe somewhat the Vegas Golden Knights, just because I was pretty cool. Always rooting for Vegas to get a team and what they almost did.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say the only, like, baseball, I used to like the A's a little bit. I don't really like them anymore. I don't really root for anyone but the Mets, and, like, they barely get my love anymore. Basketball, I don't even have a team. The Sonics went away, and I just couldn't follow anyone after that. I tried.
Yep, you could have had a dynasty.
I know.
You could have had a dynasty. You picked that name out of the bowl and said Golden State Warriors. You're like, when is this going to pay off?
We tried, too. Like, we tried legitimately for, and those of you just tuning in, me and my friend, like, we both didn't have teams, so we picked one out of a hat. We're like, whoever we get, we're going to be fans of. We tried for, like, 30 games. Like, we're like, oh, yeah, you know, follow. 2 years later, 3 years later, they became, like, the Steph Curry version of the Warriors, and it was like, well, we can't hop on now. Like, that's just really disingenuous, as opposed to the other way, which was slightly disingenuous. But
wait, were you going to work with your Chris Mullen jersey on? Like that?
I even got his flat top, like my hair done like him.
Yeah, yeah. This was a real dream teamer.
So before I was watching Netflix, I was saying, have you tuned in to Tiger King at all?
I've been hearing so much about this, and I'm kind of curious. Like, even like we were having a conversation with one of Isabel's friends, and he's saying, oh, we're all going to get on call and we're going to watch Tiger King together. And I'm almost not looking it up just for the pure surprise, but I guess let's hear about it. What's so special about this thing exactly?
Well, all right. So the documentary, Burlow, it is everything Florida. It is all those Florida stories that we do on the podcast a lot and talk about. It's like that personified. So it's like Florida, Oklahoma, back and forth. And essentially it's about this guy, Joe Exotic. He, you know, mullet, bleach blonde mullet, gay guy, tattoos everywhere, wears tiger outfits, and he owns a zoo in Oklahoma there with the most amount of exotic animals, tigers, things like that.
Now, is he going by Joe Exotic, yes, or did you just describe it? Wow. Okay.
No. Yeah, exactly. And I'll just give you a couple hot points here. Hot points. I don't even know if that's a term. It is now. Scott's hot points.
Hot points.
So he's this gay guy. He gets married to this big redneck guy with like two teeth, right? Okay. And then a couple years later, he gets married to this like 19-year-old, 20-year-old guy, and they make like a what do you call it? Like a thruple, like three people in a like a polyamory, like.
Okay.
The three of them get married together. Like they're in a three. So.
Okay. Yeah. So they're one big unit, for lack of a better term.
Right. And that is just like the background on this guy. So it just goes on to talk about, like, I'm not going to ruin it for you. Basically, a murder case evolves, and there's a whole bunch of things back and forth, and things with the zoo. And it's a 7-part documentary series. And, I think it was released at the most perfect time you could ever have a 7-part series release, when everybody is home on quarantine.
Now, was this movie originally called Killer Unicorn out of curiosity?
No. But no. So I don't know, man. It was just so intriguing. It reminded the only other thing I thought was a little better. I watch a lot of documentaries. Was Don't F with Cats, which was one of the craziest things I've ever seen. Which was about this guy who basically murdered these cats on like YouTube and like Facebook Live, and basically it turned out to be this sociopath killer, and it's all about how these people on Facebook basically tracked this guy down and were able to kind of figure it out. You should watch that one too. But I guess it brought me to thinking about like exotic animals and incidents with animals and things like that. I was wondering if what kind of incidents you in your life, like the closest you've ever had with like an animal that like either scared you or fought back or like a wild animal. Like one of them I was thinking of, and I may have told this before, was my ex-wife had two cats. Okay. Mm-hmm. And now you probably know the story, but this kind of goes along with what we're talking about here. So she had two cats, and my ex had left for, God, had to be 6, 7, 8 months, I don't know, prior, and I was taking care of these cats. This was a lot of times when me and Mike would podcast, like, just hang out, basically podcast, you know, like, hey, I want to come over, have a couple beers, podcast. It was a couple times a week.
Yeah, if I recall, like, we would go upstairs into the one spare bedroom, which was basically the podcast room.
Yep.
And the cats had their own litter box room.
They did.
Upstairs.
And then every once in a while, I'd run out of the room and be like, Obi! Because he was eating all the cat food, which was my dog.
Yeah.
Now, it was so eventually I was trying to sell the house all along, but was trying to get it into the right season, fix it up, blah, 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 blah. And so the time came, and the girl still hadn't come for her cats. And I would, like, falsely threaten, like, hey, I'm going to get rid of these cats. And the animal lover in me, it was like pulling on my heartstrings. I couldn't be like, hey, I'm going on Craigslist or something, and be like, I'm just going to give two cats away. Now, I didn't particularly... I'm not really a cat guy. I could love a cat when it's like hanging out with me and whatnot. But I didn't really want two cats. And where I was going with my... There's a cat right there. Mike's holding a cat. Yep. Where I was going, I couldn't have cats. So I had to get rid of these things. So I eventually contacted her family. He was like, all right, you got to... Guys, I don't know what you want to do with these cats, but you have to take them either to her or whatever happens after this... I have to wash my hands of this. I can't keep it. Like, now, keep in mind, I had zero expendable income. So I would go to the store and pick up like a bag of cat food for whatever it was, like $6. And at the time, I had oil heat. And it was like kind of the winter. I had to heat the house. The oil was so low that I didn't have money to order the minimum amount of oil that the delivery service would get. Mm. So I would carry around a diesel gas tank and go get like 3 gallons of diesel and pour it into the oil tank.
Into the cat food. Gotcha.
Right. On the cat and then try to throw matches at it. But they were just so frisky, you know?
Like, yeah, they're really fast. They're too fast for them flames.
So I was living, not even paycheck to paycheck. I was just figuring it out, working whatever I could, figuring it out. So the day comes where I got to try to pack these cats up. And I don't know if – I know people out there, if you've ever tried to kind of corner a cat that doesn't want to be cornered, they go from – I don't know. What's your cat weigh? Maybe your cat that you got there, 12 pounds, something like that maybe?
Stubby, I would probably say – I would range her somewhere – I would say less than 12. I'd probably put her in the like 8 to 10 range.
Okay, so even smaller. Okay. So these cats, one was pretty big, the other one was medium size, and so I immediately I get them both in a room, and I trap them in there. So right away they start getting a little like really they know something's up. Mm-hmm. They know everything. Now, I have to think of some kind of system to get the one cat in. So the one cat was significantly dumber than the other one. Okay, their names are Charlie and Dee. Charlie he was the sweet one of the two, Charlie, but he was dumb as a super dumb animal. Okay.
Fit the character.
Yeah. Right. If you're always Sunny fan, picture Charlie incarnated in a cat. So I get him into the crate through some kind. I threw like a laundry basket on him, and I was able to take a towel and drape it over the laundry basket. This might be hard audio wise to understand, but
let me help out the audience. And if you remember the game Mousetrap,
right?
That's what basically Scott did to his cat.
Right.
He hit a lever. Some guy hit a boot, which hit a bathtub, threw out a marble, which in turn put a hamper over a cat.
What are those machines called? Oh, Rube Goldberg machines. Yeah, mm-hmm. That one thing. So if you picture a laundry basket, cats underneath, I took a towel, draped it over the top of the laundry basket, and put my feet on the towel on both sides of the laundry basket, so it was pinned down. So now I took a couple other towels and kind of formed a tunnel system into the cage. So he had nowhere to go, lifted it up, got it in there. Boom. One cat done. Now, I only had one cage, okay? So now I had to get the other cat into the cage. And the other cat hated me from day one. It was very skittish. Every once in a while you're sleeping, it would, like, sit on you. Which just shows you cats are murderers. Because doesn't like me all during the day, but like, oh, let's sit on him at night. You know, like, let's just taunt him. Yeah.
He's like, why don't you move me? Why'd you move me?
I just picture the cat like pawing at my hair a little bit, like just slap it, you know, just like, wake up. You can't, you know. And then there's my dumb dog, just like, who's completely scared of that cat also. So like, I would throw a toy and the toy would bounce in between the cat and him. And he would just be like, not going near the cat, you know, like, So my wife's ex-wife's sister was there at the time helping me back. I said, Liz, you got to help me out. We got to try to get D into the cage. Now, we're trying. I'm moving furniture. I'm throwing the mattress over. The cat is everywhere. At one point, the cat scurries up the wall. And I swear on my life, it scurries up the wall with no, there's nothing it's grabbing on. It's just into the drywall somehow. And gets all the way above the window, like where a curtain would be, and it's just somehow sprawled on the top, just going like, I'm like, oh my god.
So this cat's gargoyling you, basically.
Yeah, like,
and it's on top of the building, just like, what you got?
Yeah,
come on.
So these cats turn from 10-pound animals. In these moments, you just realize how weak a human is. Like, here's a 10-pound animal that can fend off two humans for at least an hour, over and over again. And so the cat's starting to get like crazy, making crazy sounds. And now the other cat in the cage is going, like, you know, he's screaming. It's a mayhem, a scene of mayhem. So the cat goes under the dresser, and I block off one side so it can't get outside the one right side of the dresser. So its only way out was, and then I block off the left side. So the only way out, Mike, was from the front. So it's me in front of the dresser. It's cat under the dresser. That's it, front. So I try to get another laundry basket, the one that got the first cat. And I get it, and I'm trying to get it. And I'm just trying to grab the cat. I'm like, relax. Cat chomps as hard as it can through my fingernail and through the tip of my finger. And I go, son of a... It, like, I've been bit by my dog playing around a million times. It hurt. This, whatever, for whatever reason, was like a piercing, like, pain. I was just cursing. I'm bleeding. Eventually get the cat in after a long time. And it's just, these moments make you just realize we are giant wuss. Like, Mike, you're 6 foot something. I'm 6 foot something, 200 something pounds. Like, can't fend off a 10-pound animal. Never mind. I'm watching a documentary, thinking of this guy has 270, 800 pound tigers and wild animals and whatnot. Makes you feel very human and in the moment. Oh, and eventually I had to go get a tetanus shot and all this other stuff. It was great.
Yeah, I used to do bet teching, as I brought up on the show before, and I've said it a million times. I will take your 200-pound Rottweiler that is vicious and wants to devour me over a 10-pound skittish cat.
Yep.
And it always boils down to one thing in the vet tech world. Once I get under your dog's neck and I bring him in, the dog has no other weapons. Now, he can try to back up or whatever, but I always know I only have one weapon to worry about, his mouth. Cats are four claws, a mouth, and somehow they can use all five at the same time.
And psychopaths.
Oh, yeah. They are lethal beyond words, and there is no reasoning to a cat. A dog you can have, as mad as it is, you can softly talk to them, and sometimes you get lucky and they'll calm down and they say, okay, it's all right, it's all right. No, I mean, even the shots these dogs get, when they're the bigger they are, the less they feel it, so it's not a big deal. These cats are endless balls of anger ready to explode in your face, and there is no mercy in the world. There is nothing you can negotiate with a cat.
You know what cats are like? You ever watch Cops, right?
Uh-huh.
And some white trash guy is getting arrested. He's got no shirt on, and dogs are barking in the background. They go into some weird domestic thing. And then, like, the white trash girlfriend, meth addict girlfriend comes out, and she's just looking to start problems, and she does not care, and the cops are trying to take her down. And, like, the guy's already arrested and at his most vulnerable point, and the woman just comes back, and, yeah, you, it's so late on your child support. Like, they just can't stop her. They're trying to hold it. That's what cats are. They're like the meth addict females of the animal world.
Absolutely. I probably told this story before on the show, but hey, we got a lot of new people. We'll just throw it out there.
I was going to say, why don't we get to our guest, and then we'll continue. Okay. We'll make this whole episode about animals.
That sounds good.
Because I got a couple more animal things that have happened before. So, Mike, save that story. I want to get to our guest. Plus, our guest, very timely. We have to go down under for our guests. Not like under the not under the dresser.
Under the dresser where ravenous cats are ready to devour our faces. Gotcha.
Right. No. We are. So we've been put in touch with a band called Eliza and the Delusionals. And they're a really, really sweet band. And they actually just had to get back to Australia due to the quarantine. But they put out a really cool album recently. And we're going to get to talk to them right now. So let's give them a call.
Hello, Eliza speaking.
Eliza, it's Scott and Mike from Verbal Shenanigans. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Great. I like your profile picture of the dog staring very intensely at me.
Oh, thank you. That's Luna. Thank you. She's adorable.
She is.
Oh, that is adorable. I just looked at my phone.
So, Eliza, first off, thanks for giving us a few minutes on the cast here.
That's okay. Thanks for having me.
No problem. So I guess it would be remiss. I know you guys were, you know, we've been scheduling this on and off, and clearly a couple things have come up in the world. And you guys you were just in the States and you had to go back to Australia, correct?
Yes, we're back home now and we're currently in mandatory self-isolation for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So yes, I'm staying out the back of my dad's house, luckily with Kurt. Who plays guitar in the band as well, Kurt and I are here together. If I was by myself, I would be going insane, I think.
So what was that like, the lead up to kind of not knowing if you were going to have to go home, or and also like getting on a plane and whatnot? What was that whole hysteria like?
So first of all, South by Southwest got canceled. Yes. And that was like kind of the first thing that you know, was the domino effect, I guess, of everything.
And you guys are going to do Firefly too, right?
Yes. Yeah, we do have Firefly. As far as I know, that's still going ahead, but things change within the hour, and that's kind of what was happening for us. So that got canceled. And then we like South by got canceled, and then all of a sudden we were like, okay, well, like, what do we do now? Like, what's happening? And then we were going to go and stay up at a friend of ours was inviting us to stay up at Napa Valley for like a little bit till like the dust settles, and we were going to do some riding. And our manager was like, yeah, like that's all good. And then right. he ended up coming home a few days earlier because he was in LA with us. And when he got home, he was like, you guys just need to come home now. Like, this is just getting more and more serious. So we booked the soonest flight that we could. And yeah, it was just like really crazy. Like, things were changing by the hour. Like, as soon as we had a plan in place, mm-hmm. another like curveball would come in and we'd have to change the whole thing. And like, yeah, it was super unpredictable, but I think we made the right choice by coming home because our prime minister's, not letting flights go internationally from the 29th, I think. So, yeah.
And is the self-quarantine, is that a countrywide thing or is that an item because you came over internationally? What's that about?
Yeah, so they the Prime Minister decided that everyone who comes from overseas has to self-isolate for 2 weeks because I think that's how long it takes for, like, symptoms right, to show if you're sick. Right, incubation period, yeah. Yeah, so that's what we're like. Luckily, my dad has like a flat at the back of his house, so we've just been comfortably living in here. I mean, it sucks we can't even like go out to the beach or anything like that. But yeah. But yeah, I mean, there could be worse places to
yeah.
be.
Yeah, I mean, it sucks. Obviously, as an artist, who we're seeing, you know, every art basically out there right now is on hiatus for. For God knows how much, especially, you know, in the U.S., every comedy show I had is canceled. Every musicians are out of work. Even just movies aren't being made right now. Actor, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it must be
crazy.
Tough as an artist to kind of, I guess, to have that just settle in and realize that you're not going to be playing anytime soon.
Yeah, it was really weird because at first – when our manager was like, yeah, like this, you know, there's been talks of like this being canceled and that being canceled. And I was like, that won't happen. Like, they won't do that. Like, how could they do that? You know what I mean? There's too much like money and like people relying on their jobs, but they did.
Yep.
So it was kind of just like all of a sudden we were all like, wait a second, like everything's shutting down. And, I guess it's hard because, you know, we can't really sit here and like sort of feel sad for ourselves because it's not just us, it's everyone in so many different industries. So we all just have to like band together and support each other, I guess. So
Now truthfulness here. Were you able to pick the delusional you got to be quarantined with, or were you forced with Kurt?
No, well, Kurt's actually my partner, so it worked out well that way. Yeah. So I guess I would choose him anyways.
So I guess we can get away from the giant global issue that's going on and focus a little bit more on you guys and your music and whatnot. So you guys, before this all happened, you were touring with Silver Sun Pickups. Had you guys worked with them before, or is this a brand new relationship that you guys started just this year?
It was completely new, and for us, it was like completely out of the blue, like super random.
Yeah.
Because they heard our song on the radio and they just really liked us.
Oh, that's cool.
Well, when we got to meet them, I was like super curious. I was like, so how did you like even like find our song? Cause we're just like a random band from Australia.
Yeah.
And then they were like, yeah, we heard it online and we really wanted you to come to the tour and we weren't sure cause you were from so far away. And I was like, I'm pretty sure as soon as we found out, we just said to like our team, we were like, okay, what do we need to do? Like, how can we get the money to like get our visas and go there like as soon as possible to do this tour and stuff? So we did have to miss the first show thanks to immigration, but we did get there just in time for the second. We landed in the morning, rehearsed with our drummer that we had just met, and then went and did the show and then continued the rest of the tour. So
that's crazy.
It was wild, but it was really, really good. There was like no time to like stop and actually think about what the hell was like going on. We were just sort of doing it.
Yep.
So I guess that's what like kind of nice about coming home, I guess, is like a bit of downtime to like be like, okay, that just happened for like 2 months. So yeah.
Well, I mean, like when I got the email and the kind of the bio on the group and I saw that you guys were with them, and then I went and listened to you know, 5-6 songs or whatever. And I'm like, I think you guys are a perfect match, you know, touring with them. There's some similarities. Obviously, there's some differences. But I think you guys are a good match for their audience.
Thank you. I bought their album when I was like 15 years old. Mm-hmm. So I've been listening to them forever. I think like they're amazing musicians and they're amazing people. They welcomed us. They welcomed us so kindly and like did so much for us on that tour, which you just would never expect to be treated like that as an opening band for a band that big. So yeah. it was really, really, really nice.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I'm just kind of curious, going back to one thing you said, what is like this interview process with this drummer like? Because you got to be sitting back saying, oh, my God, I've been listening. We're touring with Silver Sun Pickups and we need to sound great because they're bringing us on. There has to be some point where it's like, you better not mess up this beat here.
Well, it was really crazy because originally we wanted to bring one of our friends from home because we don't actually have like a permanent drummer in the band. But due to like the visa like rules and guidelines and stuff, we had to get someone from overseas. And luckily our manager is a drummer as well. So he like was able to find some people through like friends of friends or something over there. And we had like... We met up with his name's David. We met up with David at the airport. He picked us up and we went out to Santa Ana where the first show was and we did like a rehearsal. Luckily he had already learned like everything pretty much down pat. We just went through a couple of things and it was pretty like spot on. And then from there we just kept sort of getting to know each other as musicians a little bit more on stage and stuff. And yeah, it was fun. It was really, really good. So yeah.
Now, when did you, what was your kind of, your background in music? Were you a kid who was taught piano or were you a singer or did you just pick it up late in life? What was your kind of origin story, if you will?
Yeah. For me personally, I always loved like singing and, you know, I did like a few like singing lessons was that when I was in like grade 5 and 6. Mm-hmm. Like I just loved it so much. And then I first started getting into like bands. First band I got into was Coldplay. And my mom went and took me to their concert in 2008. And it actually coincidentally was Kurt's first concert as well. We just didn't go together or know that we were there. But
that's funny.
Yeah, I went and saw that. And it was so funny because when Kurt and I like, you know, became friends later in life and all of that, like we spoke about it and I was like, yeah, this was my first concert. It was the reason I wanted to be in a band and like be on stage and stuff because I was so inspired. And he was like, that's exactly what happened to me. So it was super weird. But Coldplay have been like a huge, huge influence. And then, like that's when I started to like get more interested in songwriting. And that's why I picked up bass and guitar and things like that. So I could learn to play some chords and write some songs. So yeah.
Nice.
So how long were you doing your thing before the band started getting together?
All through school it was like, you know, always something I wanted to do. Like all my lunches were spent with some of my friends in the music rooms at school, just like playing covers and trying to write songs and things like that. And then after school I just like thought straight up, like, you know, well, now it's like time to actually start something. And that's why I named the band like Eliza and the Delusionals, because I thought like I'm just going to start it by myself and like get some friends to sort of fill in, because I'm probably not going to find some people that, you know, care about the songs as much as I do. But I did end up finding people like that. So I wish I could change the name now because I feel like it's not a very fair name. But but yeah, that's kind of, you know, how it sort of happened. And I was just lucky enough to reconnect with Kurt and meet Tex and Ruby, have people that have like the same passion as I do. Yeah. So, yeah.
So now to make it fair, like every time you guys go to another place, you just switch it around. So like you're in Philly, it's the Eliza and the Delusionals. Then you go to Chicago, it's the Delusionals and Eliza.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so.
Now, you just released a new album with the single Just Exist, which I'm looking at now, has close to 2 million streams on Spotify, so it's doing very well.
Thank you.
What was the writing process on the album? Were you guys, This is like my fascination when it comes to bands and comics and everything, like how writing process works. Are you you write a song and bring it to the band? Are you, do you and Kurt write something, bring it to the band? Or are you guys like a practice and jam it out and work? Like, what's your guys' writing process here?
Yeah, I definitely think it, well, it definitely has changed, especially within the last year. Before we went into the studio with Just Exist and the rest of the songs, you know, a lot of it was myself and then, you know, bring it with the band and we all sort of like put it together.
Right.
But now a lot of the new stuff is me and Kurt writing a lot of it. Like, he comes up with some really amazing ideas and we just like start from there, or I'll come up with something and we just work through it sort of thing. So it's a lot more collaborative than it used to be, which I kind of like. And I think that's going to be really cool for songs even after this latest release. Like, yep. It's kind of like the next sort of phase of the band, which is really cool. So it's, yeah, we're always like so ahead of the release. Like, so the release is now, but yeah, those songs are written like a year and a half ago. Yeah, so yeah, we're already like moved past that and onto new things I guess.
Yeah. I feel like after this, you know, God willing, this coronavirus ends soon and these I feel like the outpouring of music and good music that's going to come out is going to be awesome. Cause I think a lot of bands and artists and everything are going to be, you know, hunkered down, write some tunes and really be ready to kind of put a bunch of stuff out there. So maybe that's one good thing that comes out of this.
Yeah, I hope so. And I think that, you know, everyone's just going to learn, like, you know, learn to be more considerate and supportive of each other. And especially in the music and entertainment industry, people have already been so, like, there's been so many nice, like, messages going around of just people being like, stay safe and like, we can't wait till it's over so we can do some gigs and that sort of thing. So yeah, I definitely think you're right there.
How long do you think the group was together before you found that sound where you said, yes, this is us?
Well, I was sort of writing songs like for it maybe when we did our first EP. That was kind of when I, like, 2017, that was when I kind of knew that it was like kind of having its own thing and like people started listening to it and being like, this is like really cool. And that's when we first started to get like radio support and things like that. So that was really good. This EP definitely is a little bit more defining. I think we all feel that as well. Like, we feel super proud of it and we feel like this is a really good representation of like us at that time period as well. So yeah, I think like definitely like this EP feels like we're just sort of getting started on everything. So yeah,
that's awesome. Now did you guys come from, what did the wildfires at all in Australia affect you guys before you came over to the States for the tour? Or
well, luckily our houses and our families and our friends were all safe.
Okay.
Kurt and I were in New York in December. So it started and we were overseas and then we came back and, you know, it was like, it was probably like an hour or two from our, like, actually directing out, like, directly affecting our houses and stuff. And we live like kind of surrounded by like foresty bush sort of stuff. So we're super, super lucky it didn't end up hitting here. But some days it was just so, like, thick with smoke that we kind of had to go north just for the day to, like, get out of the smoke.
Jeez.
Yeah, yeah. There was one particular day where it was, like, so thick. And the fire wasn't even near us. So I couldn't even imagine what it was like for the poor people that were really, really affected by it. And, like, it was so thick, Kurt and I were just like, we just have to, like, go out and do something else because, like, even just at home, it's so hot and then you have to have the windows open and the smoke's just, like, it's crazy. It was crazy. But it's all officially contained now, which is really nice, and that was sort of progressing as we were overseas. So, it's really good to see people band together and support each other in times of crisis. So,
I'm sorry, Scott. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, so you guys being an Australian band and a band kind of, you know, coming up and getting some really good opportunities and putting out some good music and, you know, with streaming nowadays, you find audiences in all different countries. What is your, like, do you find the difference between your reception in your hometowns and in Australia, your home country, and then when you come over to the States, do you see a big difference? Do you notice a following in the United States at all?
Yeah, there was definitely a huge difference. We came over to the States and You know, we do have like a fan base over here, and we have some really like solid fans in each city, right, and things like that. But when we came over to the States, it was just a complete different thing. Like, people were so excited about it. They were so excited to like meet us after the show and buy some t-shirts. And we did a couple of our own like headline shows in between, like after the Silver Sun run on our way back to LA.
Uh-huh.
And we like, we had so many people like come out for those in cities we had never even visited. So it was, and it was more than what we would do in like Sydney and Melbourne. So it was like really, really crazy for us. And we definitely like felt a different connection over there. And it's really helped us back home with like radio support and things like that as well. So awesome. Yeah, it's like, we were like so like stoked and like thankful for everyone who's like been listening to our music over there. We're so devastated we can't keep touring over there at the moment, so
it'll pass. You'll be back.
Yes, I hope so.
Speaking of tours, like before this, what was your tour life like? Were you guys like in a van going to venue to venue? Did you have a bus? Are you the kind of group that after the show starts partying, or are you going right to bed afterwards?
Look, I'd like to say we had a bus, but we were actually traveling around in an RV.
Yep.
So that was like,
no shame with that. That sounds cool.
Look, there was sometimes we were like, yeah, this is our bus. Well, this is our RV, but it was like, it was funny. And like Silver Sun thought it was friggin' hilarious as well. So it was just like, yeah, it was so funny, but it was like convenient because we could just like park up at a Walmart and just like sleep in the car park, and we got to stay there for free. So that was great.
plus the like, people watching at the Walmart is top notch.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. We pulled up on our first night. We just like pulled up at a Walmart in LA in California somewhere, and we were just like, we spent like 2 hours just walking around Walmart, and then we just walked out to the RV and went to bed. It was like really weird. But
stop bragging.
We definitely, yeah, I know. I literally like, I remember taking a shower in the RV in the Walmart car park, and I just never thought my life would come to this point, really. But it was so weird, but it was like convenient. It was fine. I mean, it took ages to get anywhere. That was a massive downfall of it. And it was really easy to get like messy. Like, I'm a huge like clean, like I have to have like the room clean and stuff. So it was really hard to like keep it tidy. But yeah, in terms of like, having like 5 people living in like a tiny thing, it was crazy. But, I think like everyone likes to have drinks and things like that, but we definitely don't sort of go out after a gig, especially because at this stage we're the ones that are driving ourselves and we're self-tour managing and things like that. We kind of like can't afford for everyone to get like really like drunk or whatever. Like, you know, sometimes it'll be like someone's night to like, or like a couple of us go and do something really fun or something, and then you know, like some of us go home and sleep so that we make sure that we wake up in time, sort of thing. Like, we're pretty
party and shifts. Like,
we have like a bit of a system, but you know, maybe when someone else is driving us around, it'll be a different situation. So yeah.
Eliza, it's been a lot of fun talking to you. We think, I mean, I think you guys will be up and running soon. It'll be a couple months, and hopefully you guys will be back over to the States. So what is what's on the horizon for the band as far as maybe what's scheduled or what you guys are planning? And where is the best place for people to kind of check you out and interact with you?
Yes. Thank you so much for having me, by the way.
No problem. Anytime.
A pleasure.
Yes. We have our new EP record, which is out today in Australia time, so you guys will get it tomorrow. I completely forgot that you guys were like a day behind, so I put it on my Instagram today and everyone's like, why can't I hear it? I'm like, oh, whoops. sorry about that, everyone. But at the moment we are actually doing a Instagram live festival. It's called Isolade, and it's this Saturday and Sunday night Australian Eastern Standard Time. So that's kind of the only thing we've got planned at the moment. Probably expect a lot. I would say, like, following us on Instagram is probably the best way to keep in touch with us as humans. And if you are going to support our music, definitely do it through Bandcamp at the moment, because at the moment they are giving artists 100% of the funds that come from their music being sold on there.
We'll share that link.
Yeah, please do. Any artists that you want to support, I think, I don't know if Bandcamp's like internationally, but I know definitely in Australia, like any artists you want to support, it's the right time to support it, support them through Bandcamp as well. So,
Yeah, guys, so definitely go, you know, if you got a couple extra bucks, buy the EP instead of just streaming it. Yeah, it goes a long way for these bands, especially in this time where everybody's kind of out of work at the moment and unsure of what tomorrow brings. So go check out the Eliza and the Delusionals album. So, Eliza, thanks so much for joining us, and be safe down there.
Thank you so much. You guys, too. Don't forget to wash your hands, all of that stuff. Thank you so much for having me.
We'll try. We'll try. Thanks so much. I will send this to you and tag you guys all up in it when it is up. And
please do.
Thanks again.
Thank you so much, guys. Take care.
Take care.
See ya.
Bye.
I'm glad I did not say Eliza and the Douche Coos this time.
I'm hoping one time.
It's funny because the couple times I said it, I'm
are
like,
"Are you talking about the girl from Angel?"
It's pretty cool. It is true, man. Like if I know I don't want to stand on my soapbox here, but if people do have a couple bucks to support an artist, whether it's a record that somebody you like, or Pearl Jam and Paul McCartney, they're okay. But it's the guys grinding from city to city, just getting their opportunity, just putting out their little EP. Maybe it's $6-$7, you know. Putting out a song, download it for $1 or $2. It does go a long way, and maybe might help someone, you know, pay their electric bill for the month. So go check out Eliza and the Delusionals and their EP. The last EP was A State of Living in an Objective Reality, and the new one I didn't even see, which apparently comes out by the time this is up. It should be there. Go help them out with that. They're a very cool band.
Yeah, and when this all blows over and they're back in the United States, go to your local Walmart and check them out.
Yeah, they'll be doing the Walmart tour, actually.
Yeah, just if you see an RV at a Walmart, just assume it's Eliza and the Douche Goose and just start banging on the door and say, "We want music, we want music."
Eliza and the Douche Goose might actually be in the Walmart parking lot tours, but the Delusionals will hopefully not be, and they'll be back here in the States. So Eliza and the Delusionals. Like Australia, they probably deal with animal stories all the time. But if you were tuning in earlier, we've basically been talking. Tiger King has really inspired me to kind of think about some different animal stories, and we were just talking about one or two before. Mike, you had a story that you wanted to relay to the audience, if you will.
Yeah. As I said a little bit earlier, I was a vet tech for a little while when I was in my teenage years, and we were a mobile vet tech place, so we would meet up in North Brunswick and either take a van or a train and go to Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Delaware, and New York. And we also had a deal in certain months, the Dollar Rabies shot deal.
Okay.
For Love My Pet. And
now let me ask you something before you move on. When you got into the vet teching thing, were you doing it like, when you thought of getting into it, were you like, "Oh, I'm an animal lover, I'm going to kind of be doing some good, I want to get into this field," or was it like a job that just kind of popped up?
It kind of popped up. I needed a weekend job. The previous year, I worked at Six Flags in the parking lot, didn't make much money on that. I kind of remember I went through orientation with Six Flags to come back to them that year. I got the vet tech job. And I gave them 2 weeks notice when I was going to start that year in 2 weeks. But the best part was they forgot they gave me my my ID card. So I went to Six Flags for free for the entire year.
There you go. Now, the vet thing, was there like an intense training period, or they were just kind of like, hey, get over here and choke this cat?
Pretty much that option, Scott. It was a girl who managed the office. She gave the knowledge that she got from somebody else, basically saying, this is how you do it. But there was no official... A vet comes in and says, okay, this is the proper way to hold an animal in either way. So it was...
figure it out, huh?
Pretty much. We basically gave vaccinations to dogs, cats, and ferrets. Jeez. So, yeah. So dogs, for the most part, we're all right. I mean, like I said, you'll get one that's a little... upset or whatever, that you can generally coerce a muzzle onto them while doing it, or you can figure out some way. I remember one dog that we gave shots to 1 week and it was super sweet. They had to come back for the boosters 2 weeks later. Dog totally remembered what occurred and just went just off the walls, bonkers, nuts, trying to kill everybody in the room. Where our only way we could figure out how to protect ourselves was we took his leash. We were in another room, and we basically threaded the leash through the door crack, and we pulled in the dog to where like the door was kind of ajar, so it's like kind of like a V. So you got the door and the wall,
right?
And we just pulled the dog in, so all the vet would have would be the butt to kind of give up the dog shots, Jesus. But.
Now, during these times, is it like pure fear, or is there like, or is there a feeling like, all right, we're going to be okay? Or is this just like every day is like the rodeo?
I mean, I didn't go into it much fear. I was always with caution going to them. As like I said, I had my own kind of hold I came up with, like even a vet, gave me credit for it, where with the dogs, where I would get under their neck and bring it in, and then I would put my arm right on my chin, so that way it's almost like a headlock.
Was this like the $1 million dream? Like, did you have a name for your move?
Oh God, here he goes! Here he goes! You just see me sneaking it up, and Jim Ross is like, "My God, he's going!
Oh my God!
But yeah, for the most part, dogs were good. I would say the biggest problems I would ever have with dogs, smaller dogs, where you couldn't really get a good grip on them. And we had like one really ancient vet who demanded all the animals were put on the folding table. So this is just a normal, everyday picnic folding table. And some guy would bring in a 250-pound Rottweiler, and he'd be like, nope, got to get it on the table, where you're like, I don't know how this is going to work. And I can pretty much tell you, this Rottweiler does not know what it's like to be off the ground.
Right.
So those were interesting times. A little side note, that guy, kind of an a-hole, that doctor, and we found out he basically bragged how he was getting his colostomy bag off during one clinic.
Okay.
Like bragging. Yeah.
And it just how was those, it?
I don't know. Like, the second we could change him with another doctor, we pretty much got rid of him. He was just one of those guys who's like, he did it clearly for the money.
Yeah.
But, I never had a true fear for dogs. Cats, my God. I mean, like I said, I mean, there were good kitties, but they're all the same way. Cats don't generally just, like, a dog will see a stranger and, you got about an 80% chance he'll come up. Hi, how's it going? I want to meet you. Be friendly. I would say cats, I would put them somewhere in the 5 to 10% range on new murder people machines and new smells. And there's not really much you can do. Like, we had a glove, which was basically a welder's glove.
Yeah.
But it's so thick that you can't get a grip on their scruff. So it's almost meaningless
yeah, yeah.
to do this. So I'm getting back to my story. So Dollar Rabies Day,
that's in after, New York. That's after Black Friday, right? That's
it's
Dollar Rabies
Day. It's like March or April, and it's living hell because the lines are forever. And the scariest part is you will get the cat lady. And we're not talking about the cat lady who has her own set of cats that she's bringing in for rabies shots. No, we're talking about the cat lady who decides to go in the woods and trap cats and do the honorable thing of trying to bring them in for rabies shots. Now, I'm not going to knock these ladies because to a degree, that is nice. They're in the wild. A rabies shot is probably worth more to these animals than the dogs and cats that basically just stay on your couch.
Right.
But regardless, as you're like going through a line and doing paperwork, and you notice the woman that would have 12 boxes, and all of them are shaking, and all of them are making a... it's literally like... It's basically like that scene in horror movies where you're walking in the woods and you hear a weird sound and you know you're dead. There's no way out of it, but you still want to run for your life.
Now, what did you make at this job?
I want to guesstimate. I think I made $8.50 an hour. Jeez.
Yeah.
I mean, it was sweet in a lot of ways. Like I said, it was a weekend job, and I mean, you would get paid even driving to the places. So, like, we would go out to like near the outskirts of Long Island, 3-hour drive to get to the Petco's down there and do it. So, I mean, it was pretty good money for what it was. But this one particular time with the dollar rabies shot, again, it just the carriers just jumping up and down with the animal in there.
Now, Mike, and listeners want to know if you still offer the dollar rabies shots.
I am not a licensed vet, so I cannot do that. I would say go to your local Petco or PetSmart and see what kind of systems they have there.
We can't do that as a promotion. Like, hey, buy a t-shirt, get a dollar rabies shot in Mike Berlew's basement.
I mean, if you want to give me some needles and we can find some rabies medicine, I mean, as long as we don't tell anybody, I don't care. So cat absolutely ballistic going in there. It absolutely petrifying. And we know we have little shot of controlling this animal. So the game plan was, we were going to take the top off of this carrier. Okay. I was going to reach in right away with my hand. Bear in mind, it would be a bare hand because, again, the welder's glove ain't going to do much.
Oh, God.
The person who was there doing the cashiering, I forget if she was doing cashiering or if we had two vet techs that day. But in any case, she was going to come in with a towel where you basically shove it down and you keep your arms directly by the sides of the cat so it's pressed down from the towel.
Okay.
And just basically shoving it up into the carrier. And then the doctor would come in, just do the quick look around and give the shot. So, we talked it out, executed it. Everything's perfect. Like, got a good grip. I was able to muscle it down. Towel was put on there. Cat is screaming like nothing I've ever heard in my life. It wants to murder, but we got it in control.
Okay.
Doctor gives the shot. He says, okay, I'm done. The girl with the towel just naturally assumes everything's good. Let's go. Of the towel.
Okay.
So that cat jumped up. His body swung around as I'm still holding on to his scruff. And all four of his paws ripped my arm through and through. Freddy Krueger could not perform the task this cat did.
Probably and in seconds flat, right?
Yeah, and as a good thank you to me, as I let go, the cat then spun its head around and took its tooth and went right through my thumbnail and then went under the big display of cat food in the area we were at. So not only am I bleeding to death, I have to still do my job of trying to tell a lady it's okay, somebody will try to get the cat, as we're basically getting broom handles to try to traverse.
What's the level of bleeding? Like, are you bleeding pretty good, like stuck pig?
Like, every time I stop pressing down, it's coming out.
Okay.
So,
okay.
If I don't keep something on it, it's going to bleed out. I don't want to say, like, coming out in buckets, but
yeah,
it's not stopping,
right,
for lack of a better term.
Yeah.
So I had to deal with that, and I had to deal with the fact that I want to basically kill this girl who put no common sense into it. But and then on top of it, we still have probably a good 25 pets remaining in there as we try to calm the audience down, saying, well, we'll be with you in 1 minute, as we're like, you got a mop?
You're like the Siegfried and Roy show where the tiger gets a little out of hand. You're like, calm down, guys. It's just a trick. He's just a little testy today.
Yeah. So that was basically my great thing. So after all that, I still had to work for another couple hours to get everybody out of the line and drive home from Yonkers, New York, and try not to curse out the girl who was the dumbest person on the planet.
It's great. Yeah, it sounds like a miserable... See, that's like a job that is very unforgiving. So I feel like the people who are doing that kind of stuff should get paid at least a good amount, because that's a hard, hard job. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, it shouldn't be like just people off, you know, it shouldn't be people looking for a weekend job for $8.50. It should be like trained, you know, people who can do this and have been through some, you know, at least some significant schooling or something like that.
Well, Scott, if they got trained vet techs, then the march might be $2 rabies shots instead of $1.
Sorry.
We can't have that. Yeah, Come on now.
I was the whole thing with these guys in this documentary, they're all addicted to like meth, but also, you know, being around exotic animals and buying and trading exotic animals and you know, tigers, monkeys, gorillas, you name it, but tigers being the big one, and charging people to come pet them, and that was like the whole thing, like they're trying to shut down that because it's kind of immoral, blah blah blah. Did you ever have there's always like guys you run into that are like, you know, you got your dog people, your cat people, fish people. I feel like a little further down the spectrum is like reptile people. Maybe bird people are there. And then it starts getting real weird after that. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, I feel like the bird reptile line is where it starts to shake a little bit. Like not as steady of a person that starts to really start collecting those kind of things.
Yeah, once you cross that line, you can't naturally go into this person's house and feel comfortable right after that. Like, there's like that. Those kind of people have to start off now before I open this door.
One time,
there's going to be some kind of lizard monkey in there.
One time me and Mike did this interview that never aired on the podcast. And this person was supposedly a reincarnation of Marilyn Monroe. That was her thing. And listen, guys, if you have an interesting guest or something, we are totally down to talk to them. But this person was so haphazard and all over the place. And the interview didn't make sense. And there was so much noise. And she was doing the interview, and apparently there was just birds flying around while she was doing. So she'd be like, yeah. They found out that my face is 60% identical to Marilyn. Like birds just, like that's all you heard, Dorney. It was mayhem. Looking back,
sentence, she would have to go over. It's okay. It's okay.
Yeah. Looking back, we probably should have released it. It's long gone. But it was so bad of an interview that we were just like, look, I had it for a couple weeks. I'm like, I'll put it out next week. I'll put it out next week. I'll put it out. And I just kind of got pushed to the bottom of the pile. And we're like, that's never coming out. So I think we have three or four that we've never aired before. But that was I just saying with the exotic animals, I remember when I was like in high school, we went to this party in the neighborhood, and like my neighborhood was pretty good, and like across the highway in my neighborhood got a little weirder. Like it wasn't like, I didn't grow up in like the most high class place in the world, but like down the road was like, you know, a little bit more seedy, if you will. And I remember going to this party. It was either in high school or like freshman year of college. And this guy was like, you know, well, I'm known as the heroin king of Avenel. I'm like, oh, okay. He's like, yeah, they call me the heroin king. People all over New Jersey know that I am the heroin king. Sure enough, he doesn't bust out heroin. He busts out a python and just has a... Now, I'm not going to lie and say it was like this, you know, the pythons you see on TV that are whatever, 7, 8, 9 feet long.
We're not talking about Jake the Snake Roberts territory.
No, not quite that big, but I would say Burlew, I'm trying to be as honest as possible, it's probably like a 4 foot, 4.5 foot python that this guy's walking around his house just being like, I'm the heroin king of Avenel, and having this python and kind of like flexing on people that he had this snake and that he should be called the heroin king of Avenel. Much like you are the, what were you, the king of
Saigon / button smasher.
Right.
Yeah. I feel the 80s kind of ruined us in that people think snake on neck equals cool. Nobody's been able to technically pull that off that wasn't a celebrity. And people have to realize that snakes are cool. I'm not anti. Like if you say, hey, I got like a large snake, you want to see it? Yeah. I mean, we'll check it out. And
see, that's where I get a little weird. I always thought snake owners, borderline, that's the, like, if I was making a graph, they would be further and further away from like normal pet people.
Well, it depends, because there are some of them who like keep it in the tank and won't bring it out, or it'll be like, hey, you want me to bring it out? You want to hold it? Versus just walking into the living room naturally, hey guys,
yeah,
who wants drinks?
Okay,
like, no. No.
Anybody want some cocktail weenies? Meanwhile, he's got a freaking anaconda rolling around.
Yeah, these are the guys who put that picture on Tinder and never get a swipe right. See, never.
I think it's a little weird when someone's got like a pet that you have to actively find live animals to feed. I think it's just a whole other... There's something there. There's something deep down in that person that like kind of likes it. I really think they kind of like watching the hunt and the swallowing and the kill. There's something there to me.
I think that's another side thing. Like the people are like too zealous about it. Oh my, okay, it's been 3 days. Do you know what that means? It's like that's something. Like snakes are cool, but and I'm not against like nature. I'm not going to say, hey, give them like a vegan wrap mouth. But at the same time, it's like, I don't need to see it. That's not my thing. I understand the circle of life. Go do it on your side.
I don't mind it in the wild. I find it hard to, like, a person who goes by as, like, little bait mice and stuff like that and likes the feeding and all that. I don't know. I feel like, okay, the center would be normal person with kids and dog and cat. And then it builds, like I said. Snake people, pretty far from the right. Like, if you were to be, like, a politician and you would say left and right, these guys are the extremists on the other side. That's where it starts. Yeah. And then you talk the extreme extremists. They're, like, the guys who have, like, lemurs and llamas and wild bears in their house.
Yeah, I would say I'd probably put snakes, if we had, like, a a color chart to, you know how they have it for, okay, where we at in a disaster?
Yes.
Like, I would put snakes somewhere in the middle yellow to closer to orange, where it's like, all right, I mean, we're not technically in a situation, but we're getting in there.
Right.
We have to watch this.
You know, like when they tell people, like, they're sociopaths and there's like triggers and things you should look for. I feel like snake owning might be one of those things. Like, oh, suddenly he wants an anaconda. Yeah, he might shoot a school next week. Like, he, you know, I feel like it might be one of them. Sorry,
so,
guys.
So basically, sex offenders and snake owners should register. And like, hi, I just moved into the neighborhood. FYI, I own 4 anacondas.
Now, if you were like, I would never keep an exotic animal because I have no interest in it. But if there was an exotic animal that you could keep and it could be domesticated and if there was no chance of it ever like killing you and your family, like those people with the chimpanzees and the gorillas and stuff like that, it rips their arms off and they're like, I don't know how it happened. Turns out they're feeding it Xanax and like loving it and like they try to have a relationship with it. There's always like a big story to like the background. But if you could, without a relationship, Mike, and without the Xanax and the wine, you can just pick an animal and just like, hey, be like, hey, I have this around. Like, oh, this is Barry. He's a what? What would it be? What would be the animal you would try to keep?
I think I kind of talked about this. Like, if I think we talked about in that episode, like if I won like the big lottery,
yes,
I would have a fawn.
Okay.
Like a deer.
Right.
I feel deers could get to that level of domestication. I don't know why we haven't looked into this further. This is very important to me. I feel we should have home deers available.
Home deers?
Yeah.
And like, that's what they should be called also. Buy your home deer.
Hi, I'm Mike Berlew from Berlew's Home Deer Emporium.
Are you tired of your deerless homes? Are you tired of always having to go out and find deer to look at? Get yourself a home deer.
Putting corn out to your front porch to try to lure in a deer? Well, look no further.
Have you ever lured in a deer into your house and realized, oh, crap, that's a bad mistake, and all your furniture is ruined? That's because you don't have a home deer.
Yeah. We train our deers before we put it in your home.
Now, why a home deer? Why a deer?
I feel they are just, they're adorable. I feel they, if they were properly trained, they could, like, sit on a couch and take rubs or something and
take rubs.
And I feel like it'd be just so cool, just like,
right,
you know, you go out to the park and it's just like, go ahead, you know, trot around for a while, and
right,
when you're done, get into the Honda CRV.
So you know? Right now you have like your little man cave or whatever you want, and you got your cat, and I'm sure the dog comes down there sometime. In your ideal world, after we turn off the podcast right now, like, we're going to sign off in a few minutes, right?
Yeah.
You're going to flip on, like, I don't know, what's a movie you like, Mike? You're going to put on, like, Pulp Fiction, something like that?
Oh, okay.
All right.
Okay.
You're going to throw on Pulp Fiction, be like, no work tomorrow. I could sleep in a little bit. Got to do a couple things. I just want to cuddle here with my pup and my kitten and my home deer.
That would be adorable.
Right.
Like, you know Callie. Callie's basically got marks like a deer.
I just feel
it would be so comfortable, just have it hanging around. I don't think, I'm pretty sure their poops are like pellets or whatever.
Probably.
So I have less cleanup to worry about. I mean, maybe we could even look at like, kind of like a box or something like that, kind of like the cats get, you know, some
litter
for them. And I feel they would just be like super sweet and appreciative and
appreciative.
Yeah, it'd be a good world, you know.
I feel like I want to see that Christmas card, like, hey, happy Merry Christmas from the Berlews. It's Izzy, it's Mike, it's Stubby, it's Callie, and Home Deer. Just like all you guys.
You must name your home deer. It's a mandatory.
Just like you guys buy a fireplace or something like that. All right. See, I would go one of two ways.
We're all wearing matching sweaters.
I would go one of two ways, like one of two things, but they would have to be able to be smaller than what they are in the wild. Like, I would have to have either a bear that's the size of a dog, because I think that would be adorable, or a moose that's the size of a dog.
See, the thing I fear about the moose is the whole antler thing. Those things get pretty out of hand. I mean,
I know, but you can make that. You can make that argument with claws or teeth or things like that. I feel like if it's domesticated, he'll just it'll be cute. We could put on little Christmas lights on his antlers when he's like in the holiday season. We could put like eggs on the tip of each antler for Easter.
Hmm. Yeah. What do you think you would name your moose?
Definitely bear.
You would name your moose bear.
Correct.
Would you name your bear moose?
No, I name my bear Cletus.
Cletus.
Yeah. Oh, right.
From the Dukes of Hazzard. Okay. Now we're talking.
There's always a loop back. There's always
Now, would you have both with Obi, or are you imagining if you have one, you're not going to have others?
No. I'm picturing like Obi and this bear kind of like rolling around in the backyard, having a grand old time together. Obi's kind of got like a bear-like body as it is right now. He's kind of like a bulldog. It's low. It's full, you know? So I picture they'd just be like best friends.
Well, I could kind of see, if I recall when I was at your house once, or maybe you put a video on Facebook. I remember there were some baby bears outside your former home, and like Obi was chiming to go out there.
Right.
Where it was like, you might want to reconsider this, big guy.
Yeah. I ever tell you of my experience with a moose?
I don't think I did. Well, I recall we tried to get on the podcast the dude that jumped on the moose's back in Canada.
Still one of the best videos ever. Dude, you're on the oh my god. This guy jumps
thing took off with him. And
this guy jumps on a moose's back in the water off of a boat and just rides it. It's phenomenal.
It's the most epic video. I think they got fined like $3,000 each, but I still maintain worth it.
I feel like if you get like that thing's probably got like 20 million hits on YouTube, I feel like you probably make $3,000 no problem. And you can just keep going. Like $3,000 is worth the fun. But
yeah, and you can have a whole series where you just jump on wild animals to see what happens.
Exactly. So before we go, I have a whole bunch of animal stories written here, but I'm just going to go with one. We can always I may have told this on the podcast, but like we're like 6 years into this thing. We've probably said the same stories 10 times over. It's not a big deal. So I always wanted to see a moose kind of in the wild or whatever, and I went to Maine, all the way up in a place called, appropriately named, Moosehead Lake. It was about a 12-hour drive.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And we drove all the way up there, me and my ex, and we paid for this moose excursion. Okay. Now, it was, for the moose excursion, you had to get there at 5:30 in the morning. Okay, dark. Okay, you were supposed to canoe and go see mooses feed on aquatic vegetation. It was supposed to be like this picturesque kind of thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we were drinking the night before, whatever, hungover, wake up at 5, oh crap, gotta get up for the moose excursion, whatever, you know, and get there, and we get on this little van, and we have to go, they're like, yeah, it's like a 45-minute ride up to where the moose are, so just strap in and be okay. Now, in the 45-minute ride, not highways, not smooth roads, through this, like, bumpy roads. Now, being hungover, it's like, you know, like you're ready to just hurl. Now, I get car sick sometimes, like in the back, just being in the back. Never mind, just.
Mm.
So you got to take the canoe. And now, canoe is pretty heavy. Kayak, not bad. But this is a full-on canoe. You have to take it off the top of the truck and bring it down to the lake that you're going to go see these moose in. So you get in, going, you know, hungover, bringing this thing, get into the lake or whatever, paddle, 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 paddle. It's really quiet. It's kind of peaceful. It's cool. No moose. No moose. No moose. Go all the way across the lake. Oh, they're always here. They're always here. Everybody, shh, shh. No moose.
Mm-hmm.
So, oh, guys, let's paddle on the other side of the lake. Paddle, 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 paddle. No moose. Oh, we got to go to a different location. So everyone picked their canoes back up and got out of the thing. It turns out I go to another location, same story. No moose, no moose. Going, they jump back on. Look, only two other times. The lady who's our guide, she's like this big outdoor lady in overalls and everything. She's like, only two times ever have we never seen a moose. One time was during a hurricane, and the other time was just unlucky. Don't worry, guys, we're going to see a moose. Sure enough, don't see a moose. To the point where we're driving back and we're getting closer to the place. She gets out of the car. She's like, I think I see one. And she gets out of the car. It's like, like making her moose noises. She's like, yeah, you guys see it? And nobody on. They're like, no. She's like, yeah, it's over there. Like, and then, oh, ran away. And so it's like a 6-hour thing. No moose. They're like, yeah, we'll give you, don't worry, guys, totally refundable if you come back in the next 30 days. Like 30 days. I'm never going to be here. And we're like, can we come back in a couple of years? No, no, 30 days. So a big, giant strikeout. Eventually, I did see two moose, but at the side of the road at like 10:30 at night in the pitch black. And they are frighteningly big. Huge.
So that would made it worth it. And all. You didn't have to get the canoe out for that one.
Just the car.
Yeah, I imagine she did the, oh, God, I have to give out refunds. Wait, I think I see it.
Yep, yep.
Yeah. No, no, that's not a tree twig. That's a moose.
Exactly. Her boss is probably like, if you don't show these people a moose, you will not get paid. You know, like. So.
You just see some teenager got to put on an outfit and walk around in the woods. And
responding to her calls.
No, I think that's Timmy out there. No, that's a moose.
That looks just like the guy who picked us up before.
Yeah. He was trying to sell me a t-shirt.
I should have got one of those. I came from a moose excursion. And all I got was this damn t-shirt. You know? But, yeah.
On a side note, by the way, sea otter would be my secondary choice for animals.
Yeah.
I think we can keep them in the bathtub. They're just like furry little cut up piles that get wet, you know.
I feel like I could see you and a sea otter kind of like laying in your above ground pool, just kind of like asking your wife to rub your bellies.
Yeah, like a beer in one hand, sea otter in the other. I mean, totally think that could work out.
So in your dream scenario, again, it's you, the cat, the dog, the deer, and the sea otter just kind of cuddling up, getting ready to watch like the new Bond movie on TV.
Yeah, like right now on the TV is the classic Mortal Kombat movie. I could just imagine just pointing and laughing and looking over at Callie and Stubby and
right. And
Home Deer and
an Otto.
Yeah, Otto. That's a good one. That's a preliminary name. We'll circle back on the name for the sea.
That's a pet rescue name. Like, oh, yeah, sure, it's Otto. Yeah, you guys change it when you get him. All right, well, I mean, I hope it goes okay for you. In fact, I think you should act on these impulses and become the next exotic animal owner. Guys, this was a lot of fun. It was nice to have some time and have some energy to get some of this out, so I hope you enjoyed what you heard tonight. Berlu, anything to promote before we get out of here?
I guess I will throw out there, I know there's a lot of blood shortages out there. People are worried about going out, but there's still a ton of people who need blood. So I would say go to redcross.org, see where they're doing their local blood bank and help out people. I know it's we're a little worried, it's tough, but we have to keep on giving, and if we can
get a pint of blood for somebody who needs it. It'd be really worth it in these trying times.
A good promotion. And I will promote a local business that has been with the in the Verbal Shenanigans family for over 3 years. And last night I ordered food from them just to support, because all these restaurants are really, really taking a massive beating. They're starting to do takeout. You could take out drinks. You could take out. You could get beers on the way out. So it's pretty cool. So like, if you're hanging out and you're like, hey, let's get let's get two burgers and maybe a dessert and a bottle of wine, or maybe rather than your normal typical bottle of wine, maybe you want to get two craft beers that, you know, hey, we both love craft beer. Let's get two beers to go. It's really cool. They have been the biggest supporter of Verbal Shenanigans and comedy. They have hooked us up with guests, Riley Breckenridge from Thrice and whatnot. They do the Verbal
Miller Brothers.
Right, the Miller Brothers, Jim Miller, MMA, and Dan Miller from USC. And they allow me to bring my crew of idiots every month to do comedy, and it's been a harmonious relationship, and now they need us more than ever. My wife and I did takeout last night just to support them. That is Tap House 15 in Jefferson, New Jersey. A phenomenal restaurant, phenomenal food. It's tough times for these restaurants, and you hate to see any of these ones, this put anyone out of business or push them over the threshold where they can't do it anymore. So please support them. They have been with us for a very long time and have allowed, it's been the most important thing I've ever done in my stupid little comedy career. It's made me 3,000 times the better comic, just being up there every single month and booking people and putting myself in different spots. So it is, if I ever write a book one day, they would have their own chapter. So it's Tap House 15 in Jefferson, New Jersey.
Good stuff. How many chapters am I getting?
You'll be mentioned in like the, the back, like the,
Look at the index and all. Apparently I'm on page 247.
I don't see it, but it says I'm there. But guys, this was cool. It's fun to put out content. Maybe while this quarantine goes on, we'll shoot to put out two episodes a week for, why not? It doesn't hurt. What can help us is please share our podcast with everyone you know, or just someone you know, and subscribe on iTunes, leave a review. That helps us out. You guys are always great. Follow us on all social media. Go support all our friends and whatnot, guys. Stay safe, stay healthy. Life is funny. Laugh at it. Keep the wind at your back. Bye-bye. No animals, guys. Only dogs and cats. One thought at a time. One thought.